All right, you're back in the DFSR with an MLB podcast. Here it's Friday, August 31st, day until September. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
A little out of practice, buddy. We've had a weird podcasting schedule over the last couple weeks, just with traveling, and our families were away together at the beginning of the week as we take a little respite before football season starts. But we're back here, ready to go for the long haul, baseball, football, everything you're going to need to get started for DFS, FanDuel, and DraftKings. You can go over to the site now and sign up for a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. That will be. We already have our projections up there for week one. We've been accounting for injuries already, so you can go run lineups there. Obviously, MLB still chugging away. So it's all covered in the one subscription package. It's free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after that. And I think we may even have, do we have an NFL special going on right now? Is there a sale? You tell me. You know this stuff better than I do.
You're going to have to tune in next week to find out about our sale, Doug, because it's going to be a hot one, like 7 inches from the midday sun.
Santana, that's the second time we quoted that. Sometimes when we spend too much time together, we start just quoting the same things. We already spend an S-load of time together for two guys that don't live anywhere near each other, mostly because we talk every single day. But then, yeah, a lot of the references get recycled. So that was the Santana reference came out last week while camping, and now again here on the podcast. All right.
Yeah, well, I see you didn't need to tell everyone about the camping because they actually hadn't heard it. So I was just bringing it up now, and it was fresh in everyone's mind. And now it feels,
I just think
like
it's funny.
Like being
honest, it's like more of a window.
Cut to all the podcast listeners just bent, doubled over in laughter right now.
Oh, yeah, sure they're dying. Okay. We just kind of never got there, but we will have our football podcast. We have it scheduled for everything for next week. So we're ripping, dude.
First one comes out Tuesday, so just get psyched, get pumped, get over the moon because it's going to be bananas.
Tuesday, Thursday, Friday podcast schedule for NFL is what we do during the season. And then we also, one last thing, we will have more premium content going up this season for NFL as well. We already have a premium content piece of some prop bets I think you can put in for NFL that I feel pretty confident about in terms of overall passing leader, rushing leader, and receiving leader this year. So if you want to go check that out, that's under the premium content as well. Okay, enough about the NFL. We'll talk some baseball because that is what you're here for. We've got a Friday in the majors. Some interesting plays here. I mean, some things are standing out. It's funny about where, this happens every year, but as we get later into the season, specifically on FanDuel, the pricing just doesn't get all that aggressive. We see just crazy chalk on a night-to-night basis. I don't really know another way to put it. Last night, It was German Marquez. He was 94% owned on DraftKings, so you might as well. So at that point, you're only playing with one starting pitcher on DraftKings because in cash games, every single other person started Marquez. And then on FanDuel, he was not as high owned only because one, you only have one option to pick from, and there were two other guys, Hap and Verlander, in pretty good spots. Although still, Marquez still really highly owned, something like 65%. And then bats, like some guys, 77% owned on Luke Voit, 70% owned on Giancarlo Stanton. What do we want to do with these? I mean, this is cash games specifically, so GPPs, it's obvious you can just fade these guys. Like Marquez was a pretty easy GPP fade last night just because it was pretty clear, right, at least on DraftKings, that his ownership was just going to be completely through the roof. So he got there, and he was great. He didn't get the win. But you know, what do we do with ownership numbers at this point? We'll get into some of the guys for today. But knowing that, you know, because I think we're going to be in the situation today when we talk about some of these bats and maybe even with some of the pitchers, what do we do when ownership levels are just sky high? We see it every year, NBA as well. What do we do, and how do we want to attack it? Do we kind of just want to go with the chalk continually, or is baseball a sport where maybe you can get away from it just because of the nature of the volatility of just how points are scored?
Well, it's funny. So a guy like German Marquez, like the fact that he was 94% on DraftKings means that only 6% of players on DraftKings have absolutely no clue what they're doing.
Right.
And it's not great. That number is a lot lower than it would have been in the past. Like a guy like German Marquez, whatever his price is, some very, very, very large percentage of just casual baseball fans have never heard of the guy. Like he was totally average last year. He's 23 years old. He's really nothing special. The numbers don't pop off the page because he pitches in Coors so often. And so while he was an obvious play to DFS, great DFS players, he wouldn't have been an obvious play to just like your local guy in your season-long fantasy league. You know what I mean? So like, it's an indicator that the games are harder now than ever, basically. And what you do with that pushing forward into September, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I think we tend to see an influx of more casual money come in after football season is off the ground. And this truly is probably the hardest time to play baseball throughout the year. So I don't know if you want to take more calculated shots, really try to run lineups more often when there is some sort of matter of debate around the teams. Like, so if FanDuel there were three pitchers you could actually choose from, maybe you can get an edge there. Yeah, DraftKings, it's just going to be, it's going to be tougher if they don't, if they leave the pricing that soft. So that's my general take. I don't know that you really want to change your strategy. I think the best strategy is just to play the best players, not to worry about what everyone else is doing, at least for cash games, 50-50s and double ups. And for big tournaments, I think when there is that level of groupthink, you can pivot a little bit more.
Yeah, so today we have on FanDuel, we have two what I call ace level pitchers, and then we have a group of guys below them that are, you know, moderately better, or excuse me, you know, better than average, not great, great, and then we have a bunch, so we have a list of bums that we can go through. But the two guys that I would call aces here are Severino and Kluber. Severino is 10-6 on FanDuel, Kluber's 11-5, and I think they actually swap their prices. Yeah, they do swap their prices on DraftKings, which actually I like, and I can get into that in a second why I like that. But Severino, it's basically just a complete switch. 11-3 on DraftKings, Kluber 10-3. Right now, our system is saying this is an easy call. You just have a natural price hedge between FanDuel and DraftKings. You play Severino for 1,000 or whatever that is cheaper on FanDuel, and you do the opposite on DraftKings with Kluber for 1,000 less. Does that seem? I mean, that's what our system is calling out with in terms of lineups. I feel like that's what I would do just in general of making lineups by hand, just because it's a little easier. Does that strike you as a good natural hedge, and why it's a good idea to play different sites, or do you see one as just markedly better than the other guy today?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, I don't know that I necessarily see one as markedly better than the other, but I think it's worth, well, I don't know. I guess they both sort of suffer from this. So both Kluber and Severino, their season-long lines are much better than their recent performance has been, and that's been, like, I think, scaring people off of both of these guys. Sure. So I think some people aren't going to see either as a particularly exciting play. I think, as I'm really looking at it, I would guess, like, if your whole thing is just trying to find the safest pitcher, I still do think that's Kluber in spite of two rocky starts here. The big reason I think that is he's still going very deep into games. So if you go to the beginning of July, he's got two starts where he didn't complete the sixth inning. You know, that's just an absurd level of floor that you're not going to get from a guy like Severino, who in that same time period has only pitched into the seventh inning two times. You know, so Kluber has done it in all but two starts, and Severino has only done it in two starts. And so I think if you're just looking for straight, you know, flatline safety, then I think that's a direction you could go. Of course, you have to consider the matchups here too. Kluber going up against Tampa Bay and Severino going up against Detroit. Both solid matchups, but you'd give the nod to Severino there. And that's pretty much it. I don't really know how else to break it down.
Yeah, so Severino's interesting. So he went through a stretch where he was just bad. There was no other way to put it. He was walking guys. He was allowing tons of runs. He was getting really BABIPed pretty hard. And so that...
What do you mean by BABIP for our newer listeners?
Batting average and balls put in play. So it's like a rough metric for luck in terms of just, you know, there's a norm for each pitcher about how many balls put in play will fall into hits. And you can kind of run above or below... or, you know, sometimes many standard deviations above or below what the norm is. So if you see a guy with a high BABIP, it means you can make a generalization that he's getting unlucky. It's not a perfect metric.
Fair enough.
So and again, you really need to compare pitcher to himself, really, sometimes more than just pitcher to, you know, the group writ large. So anyway, he was BABIP pretty hard, and then he's had some wonkiness too. Like I saw, because I went and looked at this, that he hadn't made it through six innings in those last two starts, despite having really good peripherals, like barely walking anyone, really getting up the strikeouts, really not allowing tons of runs. There was some wonkiness, like errors extended an inning in one game. So it just, that's what drove the pitch count up maybe a little bit higher. And BABIP kind of killed him in the game before. So I don't really know what to make of it, but I was really encouraged by looking at the peripherals on Severino in the last two starts and seeing that he had something of a bounce back, 16 strikeouts to four walks over his last 10 innings, or almost 11 innings. Those are really, really completely elite numbers, especially the strikeouts. I am still erring on the side of being bullish on him because I do think there was enough bad luck in there that it's kept his price way down for a guy that still strikes out like 11 batters per nine or something like that. He's a monster favorite at minus 350 for the Yankees today at home, which is really where you want to be with a pitcher. And we've just been down this path with him before as being a monster, like minus 400 favorite against the Royals, and they just took the L in a one game. So I'm hesitant. I think if I had to choose between the two guys, one, I'm just fine playing the price difference on both and having exposure to both because I'm neither over the moon about either or just in the dumpster on either. I think I kind of fall somewhere in between. Kluber, you know, what do we make of his strikeouts? He went through the 11, almost 12 strikeouts per nine last season, and now he's back down to under a K per inning, which is, I mean, more in line with what he had done in the past and still below. Are we seeing just a drop-off, or have we seen just a conscious choice by him? We saw this kind of same thing with Clevinger as well, and they're on the same team. A conscious choice to forego some of the strikeouts in favor of just going longer in games. You think they put that much thought into it, or you think that's just kind of what's happening for him independent of maybe a strategy that the Indians have?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, you know, the guy is 32 years old, so there's some chance he's just going to give back some of his stuff as he gets a little older. I think also, if you look just as things have progressed throughout the season, you'll see basically it's just July. July, for whatever reason, he had a 6.8 K per nine. Every other month, he's had around a strikeout per inning. So, you know, it's not the otherworldly numbers that we've seen from him at times, but it is pretty much in line with his season norms. And it looks more like last season was the outlier rather than, you know, any indication that his skill had been increasing. He's also walking fewer batters than at any point in his career too. And when you're in the zone more, you're going to strike out fewer guys because it's just harder to strike people out when you're staying in the zone. So no, I'm not too concerned about a declining skill set for Kluber, particularly at these prices. I mean, 10-3 on DraftKings is a comically low price for a guy who still is probably a true talent, one strikeout per nine guy who only walks a single batter per nine.
Yeah, that's the walks are really just so crazy elite. To walk this few batters with this kind of strikeout rate is even just having around a K per nine guy with those kind of walk numbers is just very, very rare to see. Really, nobody can pull it off just because, yeah, it's just tough against major league hitters. Final note on these two guys, we'll get to some of these other pitchers. Severino does face the very worst team in the league against righty pitching this year, and that's the Tigers. They are so bad. I mean, they're worse than the Padres, which is really saying something for how bad you are in terms of it's crazy, too, because they're worse than the Padres, and they have a DH. So I think we made that point on the podcast before. To have a DH and a better park and still rank lower in WOBA against righty pitching, you got to be trying to do that. I mean, that is really bad. They have almost no lefty bats at all, except besides Aducci. I'm not even going to count Victor Martinez as a lefty bat because he's pretty much dead man walking, and he's been better against lefties for his career, even though he's a switch hitter. And then I guess they have Nico Goodrum, but the rest of these guys are just righties, and they're complete strikeout machines. So I think that's probably where I'd err. If I had to choose price independent, I definitely would go Severino, I think, over Kluber for cash games, and obviously price makes a difference. Let's go through a couple of these other
By the pitchers. Way, real quick, Kluber, yep. Kluber fewer walks than starts this season. 25 walks, 27 starts.
That's sick. That's really, really tough to do. I don't know. The pinpoint control is something that you can get away with. You don't need to strike out as many guys if you're just making it so that
nobody ever gets to get on base for free.
Yeah, exactly. So a couple other guys. I wrote up Zach Wheeler as well. Zach Wheeler is a guy who must lament just having to pitch for the Mets, because anybody with these kind of peripherals, and not like they're crazy elite peripherals, but these kind of peripherals facing a team like the Giants would, on almost any other team in the majors, he'd be more than a minus 110 favorite or whatever. It's like basically a pick 'em going into San Francisco. And yet that's where they are because he's on them, signed the contract. Oh, no, sorry. He's an underdog. Unreal. He's an underdog.
Revenge game, too, by the way.
Oh, I forgot he came over in that trade. That was the, was that Beltran trade? What trade was that?
Yeah. Exactly.
revenge game. That's my favorite. That's my favorite
2011. He was on the Giants minor league system for a year and a half.
The best of a revenge game calls are the guys that have been like on like seven teams or whatever. How many stops back does it stop being a revenge game? Or like you just don't know any of the guys that are still there. It's like when you go back and visit college and you realize, you know, all the professors have moved on and obviously there's none of the students there. So it's kind of just the place where you went and there's no other, you don't really have any other tie to it except for showing maybe your kid the building you slept in. Anyway, Wheeler, do we like him as an underdog? I usually don't trend toward underdog pitchers just because the win is important. But, you know, for GBPs, if we're saying that the win is binary and you can kind of knock it out, knowing that you need to win anyway, just to probably take down a GPP with a pitcher, does he strike you as a guy that would qualify as having the stuff in this kind of spot against the San Francisco team?
Yeah, you know, I do think he qualifies there. I think he's more of an interesting play on FanDuel for me. I think, you know, on DraftKings, paying up 10-6 for him, I mean, I guess the real question you have to ask yourself is who is the biggest upside guy in this price range? Because, like, Kluber's cheaper than him. You're not going to ever play Wheeler over Kluber, I don't think, almost independent of the matchup. And I don't think you want to find yourself paying up for both, given some of the cheaper options we have. So, yeah, I think Wheeler is an interesting upside play. Good matchup with the Giants, good park. You know, a lot of right-handed bats that struggle against right-handed pitching. And I just think he's worse than Kluber. So I wouldn't play him in any scenario other than I just want to go away from the chalk, basically.
Yeah, that's kind of where I land with him, too. I think that I just, especially when I see guys like this around the same price tier, the easy pivot, Kluber will just be higher owned. And I think Wheeler has something in the same area of same strikeout upside if things go well, right? Like, he's got a great matchup against the Giants. The Giants are a righty-heavy team. I think they just traded McCutchen to the Yankees last night, too. I need to look at that. I should know that. I'm pretty sure I read that, and now I'm realizing I don't know if I dreamt that or not. So I'll go look that up in a second. If they lost McCutchen as well, then this team is really – it's gone from already pretty bad to I'm pretty sure he was the only guy that was even trending above replacement level. Yeah, they did trade him. So they're rocking a lineup of, like, Joe Panik. I guess Belt's good. Panik, Longoria, Belt, Crawford, and then – those are just the names you can even not puke at, and they get really bad down the bottom of the lineup. So I think that's where I see Wheeler as a guy with similar strikeout upside to Kluber that will come much less. And obviously, in terms of cash games, you'd much rather take Kluber in the same range. One guy that I think people will talk themselves into because he's been quote-unquote good in the short term is Mike Fiers. But I would caution people on that. He's been decent since he went over to the A's. But he really still doesn't strike anybody out. He's running really hot on ERA. The xFIP is about a run and a half more than the ERA. This guy is no different than he's been in the past, which is just basically an average pitcher. So don't get caught too much in, like, some of the wins and ERA stuff that's happened in the short term. I mean, Seattle's not a great team, but I think I can see people kind of talking themselves in there. Now, one last guy. We'll get to some of the hitters. I have a question on Framber Valdez. So Valdez... this is not a guy I'd spent a lot of time thinking about or knowing about until last night when I saw that he's a minus 200 favorite against he's a minus 200 favorite. Oh, shoot, I forget who he's playing now. I looked this up because I just wrote this up. The Angels. So if you look at Valdez, I can make cases for and against this guy, like, based on all the numbers that he's thrown out in the minors and the major league numbers. And he's still a minus 200 favorite against an Angels team. What are your thoughts here? And we can maybe spend a few minutes breaking down whether there are enough numbers and metrics to support playing him in possibly in cash games on DraftKings because he's so cheap. What are your thoughts here on Valdez?
Well, so for starters, I think the matchup is worth considering here. The Angels, they are a classic high floor matchup with one of the very worst WOBAs against left-handed pitching. They're bottom five, but, you know, 0.002 points away from dead last place. So,
which is really saying something when you have Mike Trout on your team.
No doubt. I mean, he missed time, so, you know, there's definitely...
But still, it really speaks to how bad they are. He missed a month or whatever he missed, but actually, I don't even think it was that long. But to have the guy who's, like, about the best hitter in all of baseball and still be so bad really says... It's like, you know, when you take LeBron off the Cavs or something like that. Look at what the pieces that are left over. It's really saying, anyway, so keep going. But I always get so sad when I think about the team that Mike Trout has to play with.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is just the natural way of things. And actually, people just tend to get mad when the good players have other good teammates. So maybe that's just what Trout is doomed to face. But yeah, he's definitely wasted on that team. Anyways, Framber Valdez goes up against them. And so it's a high floor matchup team that generally speaking can't hit left-handed pitching. They don't strike out a ton either. They're seventh from the bottom in terms of strikeout rate against left-handed pitchers. So, you know, should be a decent amount of weak contact being made there. Valdez himself is kind of an enigma, you know, like the Astros basically couldn't decide. Like, when he first came up, they just put him in the bullpen. And then he started getting these spot starts here and there. He was very, very effective. His strikeout numbers actually increased. And then his results were so good that they just couldn't put him back in the bullpen, essentially. Right. And top that off with the performance at AA this season, where he had 13 starts and averaged more than 11 Ks per nine. Like, this guy seems like a legitimate prospect. He's only 24 years old. He definitely seems to have some kind of strikeout stuff. He hasn't been very great in the majors so far, but it's just 9 1/3 innings, so I don't think you want to take away too much from it. And I think Vegas giving him the nod here and making him a minus 200 favorite against Jaime Barria and the Angels, like, it'd be tough to get a guy in this price range, consider that he's only 6,900 with this level of safety, in my opinion.
Yeah, you don't want to believe the sub-1 ERA because that's not really indicative of what his skills are. The xFIP in the major, again, it's like 10 innings. The xFIP is 4.62. He struggled with the walks and the strikeouts. I could go either way on this one. He's not a lock for me on DraftKings right now. He is in the top lineup, but there are other guys that you can slot in that are coming cheap that aren't going to blow your socks off, like Sensatella against the Padres. He's bad, but the Padres are bad. So kind of say to yourself, well, do I want to take the worst, possibly the worst pitcher of the two, but with a much better matchup in Park. That could be a case for talking yourself into Senzatella. There's not a lot of peripheral reasoning to work with him. And then I look at this money line favorite, and I'm just like, man, minus 200 seems just crazy for this guy. And that's what's driving part of our projection for him as well. Like, I don't have him in a lot of innings, like a 5 innings per start or something like that, maybe even a little bit less, a strikeout per start. But when you get this kind of money line advantage at these prices, and you have anything in the way of projected K stuff, which we have him for some Ks, it's just going to be interesting. I'm going to be, I could see this, I could see him being a 5% owned guy, and I could see him being a 45% owned guy. I don't really have a good sense of sort of what the industry thinks about Framber Valdez. And you did mention the Angels don't strike out a lot. Like David Fletcher doesn't strike out a lot. He stinks, but he never K's. Simmons never K's. Trout really doesn't K. So they are, it's going to be hard to really rock the complete K upside. I don't know. You can hear me waffling back and forth on a guy like Valdez. This one, more than most of the, usually pitching when I'm writing up picks and like looking at stuff, pitching is the thing that becomes sort of crystal clear to me really early, usually. Yeah. It's just the nature of the position. There's just a better sample size than most guys. The metrics are pretty easy to just kind of look at and know. And Valdez was one of the first guys where I was like kind of confused. I will say that I did bet the over in this game. The over's 8.5 between the Jaime Barea piece and just being a little bit still unsure about Valdez. I did put in a moderate bet on the over in this game. So as we move more toward a gambling culture in this country, trying to mm-hmm. pick some spots there. All right, we will get to some of the stacks. Hit us up with a sponsor. We'll talk about some of the bats you can target.
Awesome. Let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. Fantasy Factor has been with us for a really, really long time, and they're back running another football season this year. They have an NFL Survivor pool that they're advertising on our site right now. They will be running free rolls throughout the NFL season. NFL is really where they shine, and like I've said many times about Fantasy Factor, the best thing about them is that it's just a great place to go. Like, we're talking about 94% ownership on German Marquez on DraftKings last night. That type of thing just doesn't happen on Fantasy Factor because it's just not as riddled with super competitive players. So, yeah, go check them out, fantasyfactor.com.
All right, so we have a spot here. So I mentioned about some of the ownership levels on the bats last night. You had Yankees against Liriano. That was going to make for a nice, pretty nice smash spot. You did have the Red Sox against Giolito, who had like a no-hitter going through four innings, and then that ended pretty quickly when they just remembered they were the Red Sox, and that was Lucas Giolito, and they turned on a lot of runs. I'm wondering if you think the same thing's going to happen here tonight in this Texas-Minnesota game. The line, I believe, is somewhere around 11 right now, which stands out because, yeah, so right now the over-under on this game is 11. No other game crests over 9.5 going into the game. So if you're going to use implied runs as a decent and dirty metric to say where are expected runs, where are runs expected to take place, this game seems, I mean, so much at 20% better than some of these other games. These are like Coors level games with and here's the difference. Coors level sort of run line mm-hmm. without any change at all in the pricing. And this is something that I wonder if we're going to see it for next year. It's just not built into things this season. But, you know, Arlington.
Yeah, some developers just like getting repeated emails like, hey, any thoughts on changing the algorithm yet? We're getting more concerns about it.
I know you do it for Coors. The run lines in Texas this year have been arguably the same. I should look at this, actually, now that I think about it. Like, yep. I wonder if the run lines have just been, there's been 10, 11 implied over-unders just almost as many times as Coors. Like,
They've probably been lower, but I agree that it's really stood out as a big,
I'm going to look now. I'm just going to make a note about this because this, I think, would make for an interesting piece of content anyway, about just like general over-unders, because we do know, you can hear me typing as I do this unprofessionally, but we do know that the sites make clear distinctions for the one place in Coors where you are going to go, where more runs are going to be scored, and it is correct. They are correct to do that, I believe. But should they be doing it for Texas as well? I mean, also another thing that drives is this Texas, their pitching staff is such complete garbage that this is their thing that drives up the lines a lot. But that's kind of been the case for the Rockies at times as well in the past. I mean, the run lines are a little lower this year because they actually do have a pitching staff. So long story short, right now when you run lineups out for us, you get like three Twins, three Rangers, something like that, and then a smattering of other guys. They're just all coming so cheap. Do you think that we see the same kind of ownership levels on this game just because, hell, the runs are just so much higher than the implied runs. Like, it's not the actual runs. Implied runs are so much higher than any other game on the slate.
Yeah, I mean, right now, in FanDuel, the top overall lineup only has two hitters that aren't from this game, and the second overall lineup only has one, and that's Giancarlo Stanton.
Right.
So right now it's saying that you're going to stack this game incredibly heavily. I mean, you know, you get the Texas Park factor, but you also get Steven Gonsalves, who's was already bad in the minors, and being in the majors hasn't really helped things. 6 1/3 innings, walked almost as many guys as innings he's pitched, and that's not very good. So this guy's not long for the major leagues, I would imagine. And then Drew Hutchinson, which he's maybe the, maybe he proves me wrong that you can stick in the majors with peripherals like this, because he's got 38 2/3 innings with 5.82 walks per nine and an incredible 5.6 xFIP like that.
And if a lot of those innings were out of the bullpen.
You pitch a whole season with numbers like that, but he, that would be like a world record for if you qualified a pitcher and had an xFIP that high.
He's got 15 games and 4 starts. A lot of those innings were out of the bullpen. It's even worse. When you see numbers like that and they're out of the bullpen, you can even guide them down because there are you're just being put in optimal spots typically. I mean, he's like more been like a mop-up guy, so he's not coming in like huge leverage situations. So like, you know, they're not timing it perfectly.
Yeah, they're not bringing him in against a tough righty or whatever.
No. That's not how they're rolling with him. But yeah, and just the prices on some of these guys. So on FanDuel, on the Minnesota side, you get Forsythe. He's not very good, but he's just pretty much locked into the second spot in the order. He's 2,300, so he's free. You have guys like Sano at 2,600. Sano's got some weird stats. I looked through his stuff since being called back. The home runs are in line with his per plate appearance home run that he had done last year when he sort of kind of broke out. The problem is that's all he's done. So he has like, you know, 4 or 5 home runs in his last 100 at bats or something like that. But in those 100 bats, he has like 11 total hits. So it's really kind of been a home run or he just goes 0-for-4. So that's what's driving his price to 2,600. And I'm still fine with it against Hutchinson. I got even guys like Kepler, Maurer, Rosario. Every single one of these guys to a man is underpriced for the amount of runs are going up here. And then on the Texas side against Gonzalez, you have Beltre. He's been bad this year, but he's coming very cheap. Elvis Andrus is, I think, going to be a chalk shortstop as long as he's in the top four of the order. The only weird thing about the Rangers is they get the lefty matchup here, and a lot of their like better bats are just lefties themselves and are the worst out of their splits. Like Chu, Odor, Mazzara, those guys that are hitting the top of the lineup, they do go something like three out of the first four guys are lefties. How much does that bother you in a matchup like this? Or does Gonzalez make it so that you're not as worried about potential platoon splits? Because guys like Odor, these guys are worse against lefty pitching.
Well, definitely. I would be a little bit concerned about Odor. Someone like Chu, who's just a straight-up professional hitter, I have to think he can just handle a bad lefty. Like, you don't make it that far, like, and have a career like Chu's if a guy like Gonsalves is going to just make you feel confused just because he happens to be throwing from the left side of the mound. So I think I'd be fine with Chu. I think you can get other guys, too, here, like Beltre, Elvis Andrus. Like, you don't have to necessarily play only lefties if you're looking at Texas. And Beltre has been pretty underwhelming, but again, still a professional hitter and still should be able to. He's always been a pretty heavy platoon split guy, at least recently in his career too. And, you know, putting him up against a guy like Gonsalves should yield pretty good results.
All right. Besides this game, so I do think you see pretty heavy ownership. Really, no matter which way you're modeling, it's going to have these guys stand out to the top based on their prices. Like if you model off Vegas, if you model off peripherals, if you want off like kind of a hybrid of the two, which is what we basically do, are going to just come up with these guys. I don't think it's not a bridge too far to consider, you know, if we're just seeing these kind of ownerships. Now, if you're wanting to pivot off this game, and baseball is definitely a place where you can easily pivot because of the nature of the runs, how runs are scored, what is this, you know, is there a situation that stands out to you here as will probably be underowned and is just in a good spot to put up runs?
Well, there's another game that I think presents excellent opportunity here, and that's the Cincinnati-St. Louis game. I mean, this game features, like, obviously they're not going to be on the Gonsalves and Hutchinson level just because nobody really is in terms of being that bad. Like, those are just two of the very worst pitchers in all the majors who can start, and they're playing against each other, so you're going to focus that game. But Bailey and Gomber have been no great shakes either. Yep. Bailey this season, you know, he's reduced his already low K rate down to just around 6. He's still giving up around 2 home runs per 9 innings, so just astronomical home run rates on Bailey, which, you know, if you want to zoom in and try to target guys for stacking, obviously stacking against a guy who gives up 2 home runs every 9 innings is going to yield pretty good results. And then Gomber, he's a tricky one because his ERA is kind of low this season, and he was getting a little bit of prospect buzz coming into the year, but it really hasn't translated to the major leagues. Like, the 4.47 walks per 9, sub 8 Ks per 9, 4.87 xFIP. Yeah, I get that he struck out 10 guys per 9 in AAA this season, but it just hasn't translated to the majors. And given that he only generates ground balls on 35% of his balls in play, you can expect that 0.45 home runs per 9 to go up too. So I really like both sides here. I like the Reds, and particularly I like the Cardinals.
Yeah, I wrote up Carpenter. I think there's a couple of really nice one-offs in this game too. One, I wrote up Carpenter at third base. He's been And the guy's in his age 32 season and is putting up maybe his second best season of his career. He's got 34 home runs. That's by far the best of his career.
He's one of my favorite players, that guy. And he's just like so...
Is it because of no batting gloves? I've never been able to get over the hump. I hate watching guys that don't wear batting gloves. I'm not sure why that is. Like Jorge Posada, I never wore batting Carpenter. Gloves. Well, you didn't really play baseball.
That's not true. I play baseball.
I'm messing with you. I think it's always throwing me off a little bit with just seeing him barehanded go up there. But he,
like clockwork in and out, 380 plus on base percentage every single year. It just doesn't matter. Like pitchers just can't figure out how to not walk this guy. 14% or higher walk rate each year. It just makes the floor really high for fantasy and just makes him a really, really good, smart player. And I like that.
Yeah, no. So he's a guy that I think you can definitely, if you're gonna pay up for a batter, I think on this slate, if you're paying up for pitching, it's kind of tough. Outside of that Texas game where you actually really don't need to pay up for anybody, Carpenter would be the guy that I would pay up for. Hitting leadoff against Bailey, perfect spot. Mm-hmm. Just drives so much, you know, especially from a floor perspective, like you said, how much he just takes the walks. Bailey's just the perfect guy to do that. Like you can just almost guarantee walker contact at least at multiple times for a guy like him. The other guy on the other side I really like, just a one-off play, is Eugenio Suarez. So this is a guy who's just destroyed lefty pitching over the last couple seasons. He is... Right now, if you filter it for more than 200 plate appearances over the last couple seasons against lefties, which I mean, I'm just kind of randomly taking a number and doing it, but I think that's right around guys that are just basically everyday players. He is sixth overall in WOBA against lefty pitching after, you know, guys like Arenado and Giancarlo Stanton, JD Martinez, guys like that. But Suarez is kind of right there with them. He plays in a great park, and this game is in St. Louis, so you do move away from Cincinnati. But he's another one, 15% walk rate in this split, just 166 WRC plus, over 1,000 OPS. So if I was going to take one-offs in this game, I would definitely probably go with Suarez and Carpenter. Now, they are expensive, but they're expensive for a reason. These guys are really good hitters. Anywhere else that we can look, it's calling out Giancarlo Stanton in our system against Jordan Zimmermann. I don't love the spot. I really loved him last night, obviously, against Liriano, and he went yard and just did what he does against lefties. But against Jordan Zimmermann, righty matchup, Zimmermann has a little bit more of the K stuff, but the Yankees have a lot of implied runs here, 5.7, which is, that might be the second highest of the slate. How do you feel about that? And guys like Stanton, who are kind of expensive, but maybe not as expensive as they should be, considering how many runs the Yankees are looking at possibly tonight.
Yeah, I think Stanton is playable here. I don't think, you know, for cash games, obviously taking on that level of strikeout risk is never something you want to just go running headlong into, but Zimmermann, yeah, he's a right-handed pitcher, but he has given up a 500 slugging percentage to righties this year, right? So, like, it's not like he's going in there and just, like, cutting through these guys like a hot knife through butter the way some righties do against right-handed pitching or right-handed hitting. And basically, essentially platoon neutral. So I think if you take Stanton in basically a platoon neutral spot and understand that Zimmermann is one of the most generous guys in the league when it comes to giving up home runs, 1.61 home runs per nine, that you can see why the system might be optimistic about it. But just know that anytime you're going to play Stanton, you're going to take on some level of risk. And when you take him against a right-handed pitcher and one who has had some strikeout success this season, you could see, you know, you might not get a return on that investment. So if you're just going for the strictest, highest floor possible, you can avoid him.
Last game I want to mention, and we'll get out of here starting to run long, but when it's the Orioles versus the Royals and the over-under is 9.5, it's time for the pitchers to like really start looking themselves in the mirror, because this is, you know, when the Royals come in at 5 implied runs and the Orioles come in at 4.5, if you're Andrew Cashner and Brad Keller, I don't know what you think about yourself if you look at these kind of things. The Royals, I can't remember the last time they had an implied run at 5. This team is garbage, and they just traded away Duda, so it's like, not like he was like an MVP candidate or anything, but...
Yeah, but he's actually a major league player.
Exactly, like just a good lefty bat in the middle of the order. Whit Merrifield, Gordon, Perez, O'Hearn, Dozier, Bonifacio, Mondesi, Phillips, Escobar. That's their lineup, 5 implied runs.
You said that's a Mudcats lineup for
next. It's just like, it's so crazy. Cashner sucks. There's no other way to put it. Keller's bad too. It's just the fact that, the Orioles lineup, Mullins, Villar, VR, Mancini, Jones, Chris Davis. I can't even say the whole thing. These teams are so bad. And yet, here we are with the runs. Are these guys, worth a play here? They're all coming fairly cheap, considering their teams don't put up runs on a nightly basis. But is this a spot where, and this will be the final thought, is this a spot where it's worth it to take a bad team? Does a bad team win out against bad pitching in this kind of situation?
You can do it. I mean, this game is just mostly a case for contracting the major leagues, just like understanding that there's just too many teams in the majors. If you can get two whole teams with not only no actual good players, but not even any exciting like young prospects, no good pitchers like on either team in total. It's just a complete mess of a game. And you know, for big tournaments, I've said it once, I've said it a million times, you can get away with just stacking even not so great hitters against terrible pitching, because ultimately these guys are in the major leagues. Everyone on both teams has hit a home run this year. You know, like, stuff can happen. I guess I would be less excited about the Orioles because they're not only bad at hitting, Keller also generates a lot of ground balls. So if I had to pick a team, I guess I would pick the Royals here. But yeah, with the 82 combined wins between them, two more than the A's who are playing against Seattle today, and just as many as the Astros. Like, these are some incredibly bad teams with incredibly bad lineups. And I'd almost just recommend not playing them just because you don't want to have to turn on this game when you're like shuffling through and trying to watch your guys take at bats. Like, you don't want to be involved in this. Just that negative energy might rub off in other aspects of your life. So.
Final thought about the Royals here. Like, we do, this is just a look in their system, but we run like kind of team multipliers based on a bunch of different things on, you know, how much should we upgrade the team over their average, just mean projection, because like, you know, certain things like pitching and park go into figuring out. The 15% bonus for our uptick in the Royals is the most I've seen for them as a team this year. Like, I mean, for, like, this just, you're just, they're never getting this kind of bump because they suck so bad that usually they have an implied run line like around 3, 3.5, and you're just like, well, that's just right around what we kind of figured they would do for the course of a season. To have them up near 5, it's like, right. Whoa, holy cow, hold on a second. Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
We're actually getting guys that might be playable, but it's still Whit Merrifield and Alex Gordon, so I don't really know. All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/NFL will get you that free 3-day trial. We'll be back again with tons of podcasts next week. Football, MLB, we'll be running some NFL specials as well. We have college football action that's going, this went up for tomorrow's game, so go check that out. That's up on the site. Casey Crothers is our guy. He completely crushed it last night.
People don't know. If you haven't been around for a while, you don't know. But yeah, Casey, college football was probably our most popular offering for all the entire time it was available.
Yeah, so he's, you know, we used to sell lineups in that. We're not going to do that anymore just because that's sort of against some terms and conditions. But he's out there just kind of, I was watching him, some of his action in college football last night for the short slate. He just completely killed it. The guys, I would say, probably one of the most knowledgeable college football guys around. So just go check out some of the stuff that he's written for us. We'll be having that stuff go up. So a lot of exciting things going on. DFSR.com/NFL will get you started. All right, buddy. We'll talk to you next week with NFL, MLB. I'm excited. I can't even finish the show because I'm too excited to talk about the rest of it.
All right, man. Later.